proving I'm constantly a semi-professional. Trevor Rosen, by the way, the name of a musician in town, old friend, Travis Rosen, the name of the American Ninja Warrior. So Travis,
you just gave some musician like all kinds
of
black belts.
A lot of American Ninja Warrior love, yeah. So Travis, now two drinks are on me, but that's the limit because I'm cheap. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Julian Council producing and wondering.
No argument here.
Wondering what he did with his life. This is Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. 615-737-1025 to chime in. Especially if you want to tell me more about Travis Rosen, 615-737-1025. In the world of close enough, we'll go with that.
Only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades, Fitzy, not with
that
names.
That is.
Because if I started calling you Fritz, eventually you're not going to like it.
Yeah, that is true.
Brandon will get angry.
Yeah, Melanie the intern is the one that said that. So we're live down at the Jack Daniels Barrel House inside Bridgestone Arena because – preseason hockey gets kicked off today. The puck drops this afternoon on a doubleheader. You'll hear
all of it.
It's
kind of exciting, right?
Yeah, it is. It is.
Very exciting.
3 o'clock coverage starts on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Two games this afternoon, 3:30 and 7 p.m. against Florida. So it's the
I'm really interested to see what the crowd will be like because, I mean, this is like we talked about this. The buzz around the city for this team is at an all-time high for this time of year. I mean, you look at August and September – I've never seen this much conversation about on a hockey team in Nashville, and I've been here since before the Preds got here. So, and so have you. So it's clearly at another level. So I'm interested to see what the crowd will be like. I mean, yeah. The early game 3:30 kind of tough for people to get out of work and get down here and go to the game. But the 7 o'clock game, it'll be very interesting to see what happens. Tickets are really affordable. You can bring the kids down and watch the game. It'll be a lot of fun. And oh, by the way, your Western Conference champions are back on the ice. So it should be a lot of fun.
Well, and we were just talking about the fact that we got the luxury of training camp in some ways during the Stanley Cup playoff run. That's one of the positives that come when you deal with a lot of injuries. Guys came up unexpected contributors was really our show theme for all of May and all of June. I mean, unexpected contributors was sort of everything. So it's given a bit of an advantage.
Julian's now, Vern Fiddler scored a game-winning goal.
Right.
Cody McLeod, game-winning goal.
So now we look at it and say, now we have to look at expected contributors, and that comes down to captaincy and the captain group, the leadership group, assistant captains. I want to say straight up that I will be surprised personally if at some point PK doesn't get a letter on his chest. I mean, I think that people have been at times throughout the NHL divided on PK Subban, but we have never
no,
been.
No, just one jerk for NBC. Yeah.
Well, we have never been divided on PK and what he means to this team, the energy he brings, the leadership he brings in his own way. So I would expect that PK would be somebody that you could keep an eye on that would have high probability to get an A put on his chest, in my mind anyway. But what do I know? I don't run a hockey
team. Well, and it's interesting. There are great options for all of these roles, captaincy, alternate captains. There are so many. It's a really good problem to have. Last year, there was no discussion. It was very clear cut. It was going to be Mike Fisher. This year, there's a lot of really good quality options, and they could go a lot of different directions. Roman Josi looks like he's going to be named captain today at 12:30. I would be surprised if it was not Roman Josi. He's the longest standing member of the leadership committee and is a guy that is under contract for 3 more years and by all accounts might be the most – I mean, it's really hard when you start looking at the four defensemen and you're like, which one's better? And you're like, I mean, like, Josi is great on the rush. Ellis is great at holding the blue line. Matias Ekholm is just all around great. PK Subban's this spectacular personality and extraordinarily talented and unbelievable to knock off the puck. You look at these guys and you're like, I don't know which one's better, but Yossi's as good as any of them from a talent perspective. He drives things, scores big goals when you need him to. So I'd be shocked. Also incredibly handsome. I mean, let's not forget about that.
He's a hockey player.
He's a hockey player. So I would be shocked if Josi is not named the captain. That being said, Ryan Ellis already on the leadership committee, but out. So that means you need to name 2 more A's, essentially, to the team. Pecorine on the leadership committee as well. It makes sense not to go 3 defensemen, I think. Even though I don't know if that matters, I don't think it really matters, but it makes sense for it not to be Ekholm, Subban, and Josi.
Right.
What makes sense is a forward somewhere in that group, and you've got Ryan Johansson signed for 8 years. He's your top-line centerman. He developed into the leader on the first line against Chicago and throughout the playoffs. To me, it strikes me as either Philip Forsberg or Ryan Johansson. And by all accounts, every member, David Poyle, Peter Laviolette, every member of the Predators organization, they all speak glowingly of the maturity of Ryan Johansson. That off the ice, on the ice, he has matured into this different type of guy, and that's a leadership type of guy. And so I think Johansson and Subban strike me, along with Josi, that strikes me as the on-ice trio that will carry letters on their shirts today during the announcement. That's what it strikes me as.
And we should stress, obviously, this is all speculation, that we're just giving you our thoughts on it. Nobody's walked up and given us a little pad of paper that tells us anything. So we're just speculating at this point.
Would you be surprised if it was anyone other than Roman Josi today? Because the other option is nobody. There could be that option where they give it to nobody. Yeah, and that would be a total shock to me.
I don't think they're going to do that. I think, you know what, the thing of it is, Roman Josi makes a ton of sense, and we all keep saying it's going to be Josi. I think that makes the most sense. I wouldn't be shocked or question it if it was somebody else, just because there are so many guys that can fill that void. I wouldn't be, if it was Ryan Ellis instead, I don't take that as some great statement one way or the other. I think that Ryan Ellis sort of became a hero when he...
My vote would be Ryan Ellis, but that's because there's this charm to Ryan Ellis that exists. Like, he's just such a lovable guy on the team. Like, a gritty, gutsy, tough guy. But, you know, do you want to make a change halfway through the season? I don't think that should be a part of it. Peter Laviolette has said that it's not going to be a part. The injury doesn't play a factor in this. But he's also under contract for only 2 years. And if he's going to be a trade chip or not be able to re-sign him, do you want to change your captaincy after a year and a half with half a year injured? I don't know how much of all of that factors in. Roman Josi doesn't have that problem.
Yeah, and
either of those problems.
I agree with that. I think that makes a lot of sense. Like I said, Josi makes the most sense, and this is one of those moments where every time I try and think, maybe it's somebody else, all the people that we know that are around the team, that everybody that covers the team that we seem to talk to, and mega fans off the record, well, you know, everybody off the record comes in and says, it's going to be Josi.
Right.
I think we're all just presuming it's going to be Josi.
Although you just put it on the record.
I think that
sources it's off the record indicate Roman Josi will be the captain today. Oops, we just put it on the record.
No, I think that when I say off the record, I mean nobody's going to print with it
right.
or putting their name around it. But I think that at some point the general sense has been that it's going to be Josi, which I think would be fantastic. I think that'd be spectacular. I also think we're just overanalyzing, you know, who went to midfield and which Pred carried the sword and did the sword and the stone moment, and it was Josi. So it's like, oh, this is his time. And
yeah, and it's funny. Like, I think it's Josi, but that's not even on the list of reasons why. Like,
right, of course. No. Like, but I don't think people think it's on a list on the reason. I think people are saying that was like a very subtle hint of what's happening. I don't think it's that deep. I think at some point it was like, ooh, I'll carry the sword. Like, I think sometimes right. it's that.
He did have on jean shorts.
That's
a captain type move. I mean, you got to be a captain to wear jean shorts, I feel like, in public. And be the center of attention like that. That's a captain-esque move.
Do you, when you, because, you know, there's a place where everybody can go hang out with you this weekend, obviously on Saturday. When you do these fantastic, when you head down and you decide
to be on the edge on Saturdays for the college football watch party,
will you be wearing jean shorts?
I do not own a pair of jean shorts. Should I own a pair of jean shorts?
Well, I don't know. I mean,
if you're a Florida fan, you would.
Right, you wouldn't ask me that question. Julian owns three pairs of cargo jorts, and they're three different shades of denim.
Well,
stonewashed.
No, not at all.
Dark blue and black. Those are his three pairs of denim jorts.
Not cargo jorts, though.
Oh, definitely cargo jorts, no, with just embroidered Florida Gator logos on them.
Just normal cutoff jorts.
You can obviously see all of this on Saturday, right?
You can. At Beyond the Edge in the East Nashville College Football Watch Party. We got Vanderbilt and Alabama. Obviously, a huge game, national TV for Vanderbilt. So, because the Vanderbilt Commodores earn the right and they deserve it, we are giving the Game of the Week watch party to the Vanderbilt Commodores in the Alabama game. We got great drink specials on Pickers Vodka, New Heights Beer. Beyond the Edge, of course, is located right there just off of Five Points at 112 South 11th Street in East Nashville. The game starts at 2:30, so we'll be there around 2 and just kind of, we'll just go until y'all leave, basically. Like, we'll just be there in our jorts until you leave. But there's no Gators. We're not going to watch the Gators, so I'm not wearing jorts. I will not participate. Plus, Roman Josi is far more capable of wearing jorts than I am.
And when you are as beautiful as Roman Josi is, you can wear jorts wherever you want, really.
And hashtag heartthrob.
I think that when Roman Yossi walks into Home Depot in jorts and you know, and an 80s sweater, nobody's going to question him on that.
Wow. Like a cat sweater? Like a big cat's face?
No, I was thinking more like Jim and the Holograms or Care Bears or something. Like, that's what I want my hockey players to walk into.
So he's wearing like a Flintstones t-shirt, an Inspector Gadget t-shirt, and jorts.
Yeah.
Hey, when you're the captain of the Predators, you can pull that off.
Well, we'll keep you updated on what that looks like. Obviously, you don't want to go anywhere else throughout the course of the day, because I'm sure 3D will have some insight on it after us. And
they'll carry the press conference live as well, 12:30.
Right. So you'll get the announcement right then, and we'll give you a ton of reaction to it tomorrow as we all find out together who the new captain's going to be. So we want to change gears, get back to the NFL. Obviously, we were talking about the Titans and what Mariota's play means so far earlier. But the real question is, now that the whole division seems to be leveled off after two games, are we ready to say the Titans are the favorite in the South? We'll answer that question next. Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. This is Braden and Fitz on ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Don't forget to make your silly underdog picks, brought to you by Volunteer Hose and Gasket. Pick three college underdog teams you think will win before the weekend college football games begin. To sign up, make your picks, visit thegamenashville.com. Do it now. 615-737-1025 to hang out with us, obviously, if you want to chime in. And there's a point here where, let's be honest, I can sit here and say, hey, I don't love the efficiency yet of Marcus Mariota over 2 weeks. But then I can still sit here after 2 weeks and say, but I'm not sure the Titans aren't the favorite in the AFC South. So here's what it really comes down to for me still. I think that we saw the Jags exposed after only, you know, one more game. But I think that you look at the Jags and say, hey, Blake Bortles just doesn't give them a chance. So
week one, more of a fluke than we thought.
Well, and obviously shutting down Leonard Fournette in the running game is not something every team's going to be able to do. But when you see how easily they're made one-dimensional and what that means to them, I just don't think they can win.
Yep.
So the question becomes, what does all of this mean for Houston? Because the Texans did not look particularly good in either of their first two games, but they are 1-1, and now they do get Deshaun Watson, gets the extra 3-4 days of rest and planning and practice by doing that one game in the middle. Conspiracy theorists have already chimed in that Deshaun was intended to be the starter all along, but they were giving game one to Tom Savage to give Deshaun more time to get ready for that first game. So
interesting conspiracy theory.
Now he had more time to get ready for it. Now he has more time to get ready for the Patriots. Patriots are going to just destroy this Texans team.
Dude, they own Houston in New England, first of all. And I think that's I mean, if you're asking who's the favorite right now, and I'm going to blame you entirely, by the way, that you convinced me and got me into the Houston Texans bandwagon train car there at the end of the summer. You sort of got me onto that bandwagon, and that's a your fault thing. Now, I don't blame myself at all for that.
That's fair.
But it is hard though through 2 weeks to look at these four teams and not look at the Titans and say it's really not even close. Like, the Texans defense was great against Cincinnati. That's Cincinnati. We don't know how good that team is. They look like a dumpster fire. They were awful against Jacksonville, a team the Titans just destroyed on both sides of the ball, frankly. And now you're almost guaranteeing a 1-2 start, right, because of the New England game coming up. Not out of the question the Titans go 1-2 with Seattle coming to town. But it's hard to look at the two weeks, like you say, body of work, and then what we know about these players and coaches and say the Titans aren't the favorite. It's really hard to look at any other team in this division and say that team looks better suited for the next 14 games than the Titans do. The Titans look better situated for the next 14 games than anybody in the division. I'm not even sure it's close. So I'm officially swapping. I'm officially changing my pick.
I'm going straight Vols fan on this and just butching it. I'm digging my heels in. I'm digging my heels in. Right or wrong.
Ride or die with the Texans?
I'm ride or die here at this point. I look at, obviously, I think the big game comes October 1st. We'll get a real sense then when the Texans and Titans play each other. This is a brutal three-game stretch, though, for the Texans in the sense that they have the Patriots, then they have the Titans, then they have the Chiefs. So they get a brutal stretch. And, in fact, They have the Seahawks a couple of weeks after that. So you could argue for their next five games, very, very difficult. But then when they hit the meat of their schedule, they are flat cruising. So there's not much there. And by then, Deshaun Watson will have hopefully figured out, for his sake, how to play a little bit of quarterback in the NFL. Didn't look terrible week one or week two for him, I should say. Didn't look terrible on Thursday night. Didn't look epic to me. Just sort of looked. He achieved, as we said. So I'm still going to say, though, that ultimately I'm going with the proven entity of the defense of the Texans.
Okay.
When you look at the fact that they should be able to shut some things down. I don't know that I'm going to love anybody the week after they play the Patriots. So I'm going to feel really bad about this decision a week from today, because I think the Patriots are just going to flat out destroy them.
Yeah, and like I said, they've owned them in that location. I mean, the Texans are like 1-8 or something like that in New England, and I can't even really remember like a close game, frankly, in that group. So I'm with you. I tend to agree that they come back 1-2. I do think that we'll learn a lot more about the Titans over the next 2 weeks. Seattle and Houston, the next two games. I think 2-2, and you sort of look at that and you go, well, we probably just played three playoff teams out of four potentially, and we went 2-2. I think a lot of it hinges on how you look. If you get blown out in one of those games, that changes the way I view things. But if it's close and competitive and you play hard football, again, the rules in the NFL are sort of like, get to like 4-4 healthy, and you're in a position to make a big run, because it's never about how you play in the beginning of the season. It's always about how you play at the end of the season. Who's playing the best football the last 6 weeks of the year? That's why I don't care if DeMarco Murray plays in the next couple of weeks. It's like I want him healthy the last six games of the year, because that's when it matters the most, when you play good football. When did Aaron Rodgers make his guarantee? Were they 4-6 last year?
Oh, yeah, and it looked like it was just crumbling.
And
then all of a sudden, he goes,
I guarantee you we're going to win out, and they win six straight, and then they make it all the way to the NFC Championship game. So I think as long as you get to 4-4 and you're healthy, all your people are still there, I think that's all that really matters, is get to 4-4, and especially if you win in the division. Like, if you lose to Seattle, beat Houston, and you start 2-0 in the division, I still think you feel pretty good about where this team's at and that they're the favorite in the division.
Yeah, and I think that's what's going to be interesting to see how it plays forward. That's why through this process, I think we're really going to end up with the two-team race. That's what you and I said going in, and I continue to look at it and think this is a two-team race between the Texans and the Titans. And I will continue to dig my heels in on better win the division, because I think the AFC West looks just unreal this year. So it's going to be difficult to find their way into the playoffs otherwise.
Yeah.
Deshaun Watson really becomes he's the variable. Like we talked last week, how much could you tell going into the Jags game? How much could we possibly know about the effect the storm was going to have? Really nothing. When we started to look at the Texans, I look at it and say, how much can we know about the effect Deshaun Watson's going to have right now? Nothing. We can't. We just don't know until we see him play in a couple of football games. And this will be a great test for him taking on the Patriots, obviously, taking on Belichick. You give Belichick that kind of time to prep for a rookie quarterback, I think this thing could get ugly quick in a demoralizing way.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't know, like how much are we going to learn about Deshaun Watson this weekend? I don't think you put a whole lot of stock into it. But I do think if we're trying to figure out what we learned through 2 weeks, I do think that Jacksonville's one-dimensional nature, which I think the Titans clearly exploited in week two, what it does is we know the Colts, right? They're like the Missouri, like we've been comparing the SEC East and the AFC South all summer. Missouri's the only thing we really know about the SEC and that they're last. The Colts are the only thing we really know about the AFC South and that they're last, right?
Right.
Like, even if Andrew Luck comes back tomorrow, I'm not sure if anybody's saying that. Like, they still look pretty bad. Other than that, we're sort of not really sure. And I think Jacksonville showed us a lot more in defeat against the Titans at home than I think they showed us in victory against the Texans on the road.
That's a fair point.
And I think we learned more about Jacksonville last week. They're closer to what we saw last week than they are what we saw the first week. And I think that to me pushes Jacksonville back down to the three spot pretty clearly and makes it a two-horse race.
Well, I think to that extent too, a lot of times in the NFL, it's about what you show teams around the league. And what was shown on Sunday was a blueprint on how to beat the Jags this year. And once you've seen that, then the question is, can a team evolve out of whatever blueprint they were just shown? I don't believe in Blake Bortles to be able to evolve out of that. So I don't believe in him specifically at the quarterback position being able to handle it. So I think that no matter what Doug Marrone tries to do there, I think it's pretty much a lost cause. And as a result, no matter, at some point you can look at it and say, okay, teams figure out that they want to beat Mariota a certain way. Well, it's up to Mariota to then self-scout and figure out how to adjust. Yeah. And that's something that the Titans have done particularly well at many times throughout this process. It's not just about we know what we do and we know what they do. It's also about how do we tweak it, how do we adjust it, and when we've been stopped, how do we get past that? The way you stop the Jags is you force Blake Bortles to make a play. Unfortunately for Blake Bortles, he can't get around that because Duke can't make a play. So I think it's sometimes it's just that simple. We'll get thoughts on it next up from the Sports Exchange. Howard Balzer going to join us. We'll get Howard Balzer's thoughts on all things AFC South and all things Titans. We'll do that next up. Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. This is Braden and Fitz on ESPN, 102.5 The Game. It's time to make your picks for our Pro Football Pick'em Contest. Got a chance to win some awesome prizes, including a trip for two to Hawaii. Brought to you by Computer and Communications Innovations in Nashville. Sign up, pick now at thegamenashville.com. If you win the trip to Hawaii, feel free to take me. I mean, I would go with you to Hawaii, or you could take our very own Chase McCabe, who's already in the building and looking dashing.
You don't have to say that again, by the way, like that.
What, Hawaii?
Yeah. Okay.
Never gets old.
Didn't work.
We are live at the Jack Daniels Burl House inside Bridgestone Arena because it's preseason hockey day. A little bit of doubleheader action today. You can hear all of that action, of course, right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, starting at 3 o'clock with coverage. Game at 3:30, and then the second game is at 7 o'clock. So you can hear all of that action right here. Doubleheader of hockey. Do bring a hoodie. However, it is chilly. It is slightly – there's a nip in the air here inside.
Not outside.
Inside of Bridgestone Arena. So speaking of everybody at chilly, some people are a little chilly all of a sudden on the AFC South, so we wanted to get a little bit of a national perspective on it. From the Sports Exchange, Howard Balzer joins us. Howard, thanks for your time this morning. After 2 weeks of football, has anything really changed in your thought process around the Tennessee Titans?
No, not really. I mean, 2 weeks is, I know the NFL, obviously, I'm not being original here, is the league of overreaction. And it happens on a week-to-week basis. After every week, everyone wants to say, okay, this is the way it's going to be. But we all know how things, or should know, how things can change. And I've always thought that it's maybe not until halfway through the season, but maybe 5-6 games, you really have a sense of what teams are going to be. You can see some trends, yes. You can see some concerns and all those things, see the good things. But two games is just not enough. It would be, I mean, just do some compare. And I know football is different because there's so few games. But in other sports, if you try to make a decision after a couple of weeks of a baseball season or a hockey season or NBA, 2 or 3 weeks, and say, oh boy, this is trouble. And we know that sometimes managements overreact, as we see with coaches being fired or Cincinnati firing an offensive coordinator after two games. But I think you just have to let things, play out a bit before you really know. But I still look at that Titans team and say, hey, this is still maybe the team to beat in the division. It's not a real good division, obviously, top to bottom. There's a little concern with Murray's injury. Is that going to linger? But, of course, Derrick Henry stepped in and did a nice job on Sunday. So this is a pretty good football team. And like I said, the division, Houston can't score points. Jacksonville looking to be up and down with their quarterback situation, of course. And the Colts are just, my goodness, is Andrew Luck ever going to play? So there are a lot of question marks in this division, obviously, with after 2 weeks.
In light of what you just said, meaning you can't really take too much in 2 weeks and try to extrapolate it out, but I kind of came into the year looking at the AFC thinking it was pretty wide open behind New England and Pittsburgh. Do you still see it as that, or are there a lot of really good football teams that you've seen through 2 weeks, or is that overreaction?
I don't know if there's a lot, but I think that in my mind going in, I said exactly what you said, but I put Oakland into that top category with the possibility of Kansas City, because everyone always seems to underrate Kansas City. And I think it's probably because of the overall general perception that Alex Smith is not worth really talking about. But all the guy does, wherever he's been, is help his teams win football games. And so I think you throw those two teams in there, and that's probably where the top is. And then you say, well, you know, can Tennessee, can a couple of other teams, you know, merge their way in there? And obviously it's always possible. But certainly what we've seen from Oakland and Kansas City the first 2 weeks, it's the same formula essentially that got those teams winning 12 games last year. It seems that that is forgotten pretty quickly. They don't beat themselves. They take the ball away from opponents. They have guys that can make plays. Oakland's defense so far is playing maybe a little bit better than some people thought. But again, that doesn't mean that's going to hold up over an entire season. But those are the teams I think to watch. And nothing that I've seen so far has given me concern about that. Although Pittsburgh's play has been a little spotty so far, especially on offense. But you know, we'll see if they can start running the ball a lot better. Some of that's traced, of course, to Le'Veon Bell not being in training camp and just not really being ready for the season to start.
We're talking to Howard Balzer, columnist from the Sports Exchange. So, how big is the gap in your mind? You just mentioned several really elite teams in the mind of many. How big is the gap from those teams to a team like the Titans right now in your mind?
I don't think it's a huge gap. I think those gaps, that whatever the gap is, can be made up. And again, it all depends on how a season plays out. I mean, I think that, you know, because so much of this game is keeping people healthy, getting into a nice rhythm of your season, and being a good, and then getting some confidence. Because once you start winning some games and you start playing the way you believe yourself can, not necessarily what everybody on the outside says, then that confidence starts to build, and you believe in yourself. And the other part of it is that if you can find a way to get into the playoffs, after that, it doesn't really matter what you've done for 16 weeks. It can to a degree with home field advantage and to the teams that have the byes and all that. But we've seen enough examples over the last number of years of wild card teams coming out of that and making it to the Super Bowl. And so once you get there, it shows obviously you are a playoff caliber. And then if you're healthy, you've got your team together, then you don't have to, obviously you don't have to win many games to advance. And so I think that's the situation the Titans probably have themselves in. Certainly appears that they're going to have to win the division to have a chance, and I think they have a real good chance at doing that. And once they do that, hey, just play good football and win some games. And so I think that they would. Now, am I going to sit here and say they're capable and right now going to the Super Bowl? Probably not. But by the time the dust clears at the end and you're really able to see teams, I don't see any reason why you couldn't make the case that they could get it done.
You look at this week's upcoming opponent for the Titans, the Seattle Seahawks, the Vegas odds favorite to win the NFC, but certainly the offensive line and the offense has not looked as good. Is there anything that you've learned about Seattle, and what does the matchup look like to you on paper at least a couple of days away?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. The one thing you said about them being the favorite to win the division, they still very well probably are, but that division right now, this is really going to be odd saying this after 2 weeks. The Rams might have the best offense in that division in terms of what these teams are right now. And that's really sounding like a stretch because of how bad they've been on offense the last few years. But the Seahawks can't score points. You mentioned the offensive line. That's a huge question there. They've scored 21 points in two games. San Francisco, of course, don't even really have to discuss, 12 points in two games. And the Cardinals have issues of themselves for themselves without David Johnson. Carson Palmer so far has seemed average. Doesn't mean he can't get it together, but they've got some big questions. I think some questions on defense also. So I think the Seahawks, by the end of the year, might be that team that everyone's talking about, but they've got a lot of work to do on that. And like you said, the line is a big part of it. And it looks like they found a young running back in Chris Carson. But then again, did they? It was one game. Can he maintain that? Can he do it week after week? Well, we'll start finding out. But you certainly can't make any pronouncements after 1 week that they found their guy.
He's Howard Balzer, columnist from the Sports Exchange, joining us this morning. Howard, we appreciate your time this morning.
Anytime, guys. Take care.
Great stuff from Howard. Rams explosive offense. Shows you what a difference the right coach in the right situation can make, because they're ready to give up on Jared Goff a couple of weeks ago, and now all of a sudden might be the most explosive offense in the division. That's a glowing statement.
You and I looked at each other like what?
What?
It's not saying much, though.
I mean, that is true.
Well, Carson, but you expect – now, David Johnson being hurt, obviously, but with Carson Palmer, Fitzgerald, Nelson, I mean, you just – like, you look at that team and you go, no way the Rams are better than that team. Right?
Well, I mean, then you think about Bruce Arians when he was asked point blank what the problem with the offense was. His answer, quarterback play, and that's it. You know, so he's there's – as Julian has pointed out several times, it feels like the wheels have fallen off for Carson Palmer. I don't know that – he'll ever be able to get back to...
Should have hung him up after the NFC Championship game against Carolina. He would have gone after that.
You do have to wonder, look at it and wonder. And it's funny because that kind of leads me back to a conversation we were having earlier. I want to mention something on. Because I heard an interesting take this morning about New Orleans. And specifically, the conversation of letting Drew Brees walk at the end of his contract at the end of this year, letting Sean Payton walk, and just blowing the whole thing up. And at some point, Saints fans, it appears, are sort of done with whatever they've seen from New Orleans. It's not going to get them back to where they want to be, so it's time to move on. Say thanks for all your help in getting us a Super Bowl. Now we want something else. And I look at Drew Brees and I think, man, that's what we think of. Statistically, we think of that sort of a guy when we think of franchise quarterback. But in Tennessee, this franchise quarterback doesn't have to look like that franchise quarterback. We'll tell you what we mean by that when we come back. Braden and Fitz, ESPN. 1025 The Game. Hey, Julian, how do you feel about giving away some free stuff?
Go ahead and do it.
All right, caller number 5-615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Going to win a pair of tickets. MTSU Blue Raider football taking on Bowling Green this Saturday at Floyd Stadium.
Who knew
Floyd has his own stadium?
Floyd Stadium?
Caller number 5-615-737-1025. Still wondering if Floyd gets royalties on that. I don't get royalties for Jason's Deli, so you're listening to Braden and Fitz. We're live at the Jack Daniels Barrel House.
Braden's Furniture? Nothing. I get
there's
nothing.
There's a Braden's Furniture?
Oh, yeah, all over Knoxville.
Who knew? We're live inside Bridgestone Arena. Julian Council, obviously, is hanging out back at the Game National Studios, presented by Wholesale Link and Mount Juliet. And I think this is what happens when you have the phrase franchise quarterback. The phrase franchise quarterback to many people suddenly means a ton of yards, a ton of touchdowns, throwing the ball, slinging the ball everywhere, gunslinger, like the modern incarnation of some version of Dan Marino. That's what, when people hear you have a franchise quarterback, they think you're going to drop back, throw the ball 100 billion times, and that's how we win football.
That's a record. You'd have to ice your arm.
Well, that's what they do every drive, just throw it in the ice. But at some point, what we have to remember is that this team's franchise quarterback does not look like that team's franchise quarterback. Now, sometimes Russell Wilson in Seattle coming into town this weekend is a great example of a non-traditional franchise quarterback in the sense that he's not the guy you think of, hey, we're going to throw the ball 50 times and win football games. That's not what you necessarily think of Russell Wilson as. But when you have the benefit of a Super Bowl win your rookie year, everything else becomes, it's perceived differently. We have to get our heads wrapped around, and I don't think this is a bad thing, but our heads wrapped around the fact that this franchise quarterback is the type of guy that's not supposed to throw the ball more than 30 times.
Well, and what's interesting about that is I think if you put Mariota in a system in which that is predicated, like Bruce Arians at Arizona, Tom Brady, you know, Aaron Rodgers, like I think he's capable from a talent standpoint of being like that. That's not what this coaching staff and this offense is built for. And that's okay, to your point. I think the biggest difference, and you made a great point with Russell Wilson, the biggest difference for me in not every franchise quarterback looks the same. Like Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota could not be further apart from each other personality-wise. Like their leadership style, their personality in the locker room, on the practice field, in the community are so vastly different. And that's okay. Jameis Winston does it his way. Marcus Mariota does it his way. They're totally different style. Russell Wilson, there's a lot of stories about how he doesn't get along with his locker room. But as long as you win games and produce big plays, who cares? So there's a franchise quarterback can look like anybody. Brett Favre's style of play is so different from, you know, Drew Brees' style of play or whatever. But there's so many differences in all of these things.
There's a modern expectation now that when you hear franchise quarterback, especially when you've got guys that are making upwards of close to $30 million a year, it becomes a stat race. It becomes a race on the highlight reel instead of a race on what do they do effectively for this particular team. That's the difference that I think part of the Titan fan base needs to get their head wrapped around, because the fact is, if you're going to look at the deal that Mariota's eventually going to get in the 30-something million dollar range and try and compare it statistically to what Derek Carr's doing, you're not going to win that comparison. They're being asked to do very different things. So you just sort of have to wrap your head around the yards, the completion totals, the touchdowns are all going to be, for the most part, by design, it's going to be lower.
I agree. I totally agree. I was working through the numbers in my head because Derek Carr got, what, $25 million for 5 years, and Matt Stafford got $27 million. He's the highest paid human being on the planet in an NFL uniform. Mariota, I think people need to remember that they could pick up the fifth-year option because he's a first-round pick, of course. So that still gives him 3 more years of being under contract where he would be the average of the top 10 salaries for the last year there. And it behooves them to get that deal done before that fifth-year contract. So I don't know if over 30 is the number, but I don't think it matters.
The NFL guy that I talked to a couple of weeks ago about it said 35. That's what he's hearing in lead circles.
In 2 years, it's going to go from 27 to 35. That's craziness. Yep. But
because there are so many that are coming up,
and the cap's getting bigger every year, so the money's there. Also, again, when you have a guy, you have to pay him. I mean, I'm watching Matt Stafford last night, and sure, he's had a good start to the season, and he's had a lot of good years, and he's gotten the Lions back to the playoffs a couple of times, which is more than most human beings can say ever. So he's done something. I still don't think he's one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, but he looks pretty good. And he looked last night in week one. I don't know if he's thinner and maybe healthier, but he looks quicker and lighter and faster. And he just looks pretty good. I think he's taking maybe another step in his development 9 years into his career, which is interesting. But I don't think Stafford's in any way, shape, or form one of the top 5 or 10 quarterbacks in the NFL. But you got to pay him that way because you have a guy, or you end up like the Browns. And that's it. You can either be the Browns for 10 years or 20 years or 30 years, or you can pay one tenth of your salary cap to one player and bite the bullet and say, yeah, $30 million. Like I said, if it's 33, if it's 27, it doesn't matter. You got to pay him. You got to pay him.
The thing in the process of paying it, though, is you just got to remember that this particular quarterback in this system, he's not going to look like Aaron Rodgers. He's not going to look like that guy. You know, so there's this fine line, because it's hard for some people to hear, I want, you know, the phrase, I want to run the ball more, and then hear the phrase, by the way, you have a top quarterback here. It's hard for people to hear those two phrases and have it make sense, because the perception is, if you have that franchise quarterback, the rest of it, who cares?
But you know what happens in the postseason? You got to play defense and run the football.
Well, yeah, but you got to. You got to get to the postseason first. I mean, that's the alarming part of the jump, is that we forget Derek Carr's never even played in a postseason game. He missed the postseason game last year.
That's true.
And Matt Stafford certainly is not where he is because of postseason success. You know, that's even another line.
You know who is a franchise quarterback?
Who?
Sam Darnold, USC. I think he's going to be. And you know what he did to me this weekend?
He
cost Gale the win in silly underdog picks. I would have won the week. Now, I don't think I'm eligible to win the prize because I'm an employee of the station. But Sam Darnold cost me the win. Well, I just checked the winners of silly underdog picks, and I would have won last week had Sam Darnold not thrown that stupid 3 or 4 passes to lead to a tie.
So what
touchdown.
You're saying is that if you had Sam played Darnold the game better, if you had played the game better, you would have won.
I had Texas, I had Purdue, and I had Mississippi State, and I would have beaten Joseph from Clarksville. I would have smoked him, and Gale would have won, and then stepped away from the podium and given the prize to Joseph.
So you're saying
still going to dominate silly underdog picks. I'm going to crush them. I'm going to make them feel bad about themselves. eventually at some point during the season.
Wait, you were in 500th place last week.
I know. I'm way up. Way up the rankings. I had a big week. I've moved way up the rankings.
Where are you now?
Not 500th.
Okay. All right. So to recap, if you had played the game better, you would have won.
It says I'm 260 out of 1,000. So I went from 512 to 260. I'm moving up in the world, baby. Moving up in the world. So I'm gaining ground. Gail, she changed her strategy.
Right.
Last week, yeah, almost paid off.
Wow.
But she did get Purdue and Mississippi State right.
Yeah, well, Tennessee almost beat Florida, too. But that doesn't really count. Like, at the end of the year, you don't get to put that
listen,
trophy
I would have graciously Gail and I would have graciously stepped aside for Joseph in Clarksville to claim his prize.
I mean, ultimately, what I'm hearing is that you didn't win, right? I mean, we can dress this pig up.
I didn't hear that part.
We can walk this tough.
I was watching the Texas USC game so passionately on Saturday night.
We can.
I'm
walk,
like, no, Sam Darnold, no.
We can take the pet pig, put it in a tuxedo. You can take the pet pig to prom with you.
It'll be adorable.
It's still going to be a pet pig, and it's still not going to win the homecoming king.
Whatever.
I mean,
I'd vote for that pig.
That's fantastic.
Gail's coming for you, Darren, Willie. I see you guys, Chase.
This trash talking
Gail's
is happening.
Gail's coming for you guys.
The trash talking is happening because
dominate.
3D has entered the building, obviously. Remember, we're at the Jack Daniels Barrel House inside of Bridgestone Arena because preseason hockey, it's amazing. It's already here. Obviously, another big announcement coming this afternoon as the Preds are going to have a press conference to address the captaincy and the leadership group. That's something that you can hear right here on ESPN 102.5, as well as the games themselves. So two games today happening down at Bridgestone. It's a doubleheader. It's a hockey doubleheader.
And, of course, El Capitan will be named at 12:30. The press conference, of course, right here on ESPN 102.5, the game. I think final note of the show, I would be utterly shocked if it's not Roman Josi. It makes the most sense. All the other reasons we've talked about over the course of the last few weeks. I would assume that Roman Josi will be donning the C this afternoon at 12:30. It'll be announced right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
I think that's a pretty safe bet. Will, I know that we've been trying to get you caught up on it. 3D going to continue. I don't know what they're doing. It'll be better than what we just did. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Kevin Cow hanging out with us up here at the Jack Daniels Barrel House. And obviously, Julian Council back in studio. Melody interning. Thanks for listening to ESPN 102.5 The Game, guys. Do it again tomorrow.